reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to In the Gravel Trap. I am your host, Adam Tate of Tribute Racing, along with Joey Barnes, also of Tribute Racing, Mr. Christopher DeHardy of Motorsport.com, and Josh Farmer of Motorsport Monday. Got a great show for you guys tonight. Frank Santoroski from Drafting the Circuits will be joining us later. A lot happened this past weekend. I want to jump in feet first and talk about the IndyCar opener at St. Pete. Both Josh and Chris were there. Give us your thoughts on how everything felt out there, guys.
Well, I'll go ahead and kick this segment off. Overall, good for IndyCar as far as the attendance went. I heard report that race organizers said that 150,000 people were there in and out of the course of the entire weekend. So that was good, and the race kind of went off as what I predicted, with Team Penske pretty much stealing the show and Juan Pablo taking advantage of Will Power's crew having a mistake on pit road, and then Juan had to slow down to conserve the tires and conserve fuel, but then Juan got right on his rear wheel pods, dare I say now, and then Will tried to make a move for the win and ended up damaging his wing, but then he caught back up and then he caught Paige Kerem in a bad spot, which ended up costing him the win. But as far as Montoya goes, I think it's safe to say he's back without a doubt. I mean, you know, last year he was kind of getting the rust knocked off and adapted to the ovals quite well, and you know had a podium or two on the street circuits. But you know, now he's back and he's one to watch. And I mean, the other cause for concern that I think is the hot topic is the aero kits. I mean, the aero kits, I mean, aesthetically they look cool when they're all painted up. But as we saw, you know, there were three out of the five yellows were for debris cautions from flying shrapnel off the new aero kits, most notably the Hondas with all those appendages, you know. So and including a piece of Gabby Chavez's car actually flew over the grandstands and struck and hit a spectator in the head, and she had minor injuries, and she's listed in stable condition. But I mean, anytime you have debris fly into a spectator area, you know, that's never a good thing. I mean, it can always happen in racing, but spectators don't sign on for that. But you know, I mean, we're lucky that it was only a small piece of the wheel pod, not an entire front wing or a wheel. So, Chris, what are your other initial thoughts? And the last of the weekend before we get into deep.
Well, I was thrilled about all the on-track activity. I thought the race organizers didn't do a good job with paddock management, of course, because the Pro Mods and USF 2000 cars were way away from Indy Lights, which didn't do necessarily all the teams a lot of good. But I was thrilled with all the close racing we had. I just wish that the Pro World Challenge guys would have kept it more clean on track, because there was the second race that they had for the GT cars had a massive caution that lasted almost half the race. Focusing on the ladder series for a little bit, I wish we would have had a slightly different podium for USF 2000 and Indy Lights, because both podiums were the same in both races. So I think there's some echo going on in the background there.
Yeah, it sounds a little funny. Chris, as kind of our Mazda Road to Indy expert, I've never seen a weekend where all three series, USF 2000, Pro Mods, and Indy Lights, the same driver won both of the races for each series. Has that ever happened before?
No, this weekend was the first. This weekend was the first, and if it wouldn't have been for Pato O'Ward in the second race having a little bit of an incident, we might have had the sweep on all three podiums, because USF and Indy Lights, the same three drivers were in the same three positions for both races. That being said, I do think that the IndyCar race actually wasn't too bad. I'm sure we could have done with a little bit less car contact, but then again, the guys are going to go for the first race of the season. I was thrilled to see Power, you know, catch back up to Montoya, but Montoya ultimately in the end showed that you have to be fast everywhere, especially in the pits, because I think Power had an issue in the pits that might have cost him a little bit. I think the left rear wheel had an issue. He wasn't the only driver that had issues in the pits, though, because Dixon's air decks didn't work during the race.
Which was really weird.
It worked. Go figure. Yeah. And then they had the Graham, Ray Hall, and Charlie Kimball situation, which was a lot of fun to debrief on. But overall, it was a positive weekend. Got to spend it with Josh Farmer and a good buddy of ours, Josh Chin, and I can't complain about it.
Yeah, I think it was a successful weekend for IndyCar as a whole. Before I kind of give my take on it, as the two of you were there, what was your real take on the Kimball-Ray Hall incident? There's a lot of passion on both sides of that.
Well, me and Chris talked to Charlie after the race, and it was like the and you know he first got hit by Pagano, and then his wing was damaged, and he was trying to slow down, and then Graham just ran into him, I guess, and then you know, when we talked to him after the race, Charlie said something to the effect of my rear wheel was damaged. I was trying to slow down. So isn't that what he said to Hardy?
Yeah, he let me actually pull up my story right here, because he actually was kind of miffed at Ray Hall.
He was
I think my car was smoking, and the way he said it, it made it seem like it was incredibly obvious that, you know, Ray Hall was at fault here. I can almost mimic his tone actually afterwards. I got my article right here for everyone. So basically his tone was, there was smoke pouring off my left rear. I had to brake a touch earlier, and I was turning into the apex when he drove into my left rear. I don't know. It was pretty obvious I was coming into pit lane, and that laid into a corner. It was a dumb place to be letting people by, and he knows I'm not that dumb. So, you know, you can tell he was pretty ticked off at Graham Ray Hall.
Well, without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce Mr. Frank Santoroski of Draft in the Circuits. How are you doing, Frank?
Man, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Doing good. Doing well.
What did you make of the IndyCar opener at St. Pete, Frank?
I enjoyed it. You know, I'm an old school guy. I'd love to see the old man win the race, Montoya. Love to see the other old man on the podium, Tony Kanaan. And I'd love to see Will Power dominate the thing. My biggest takeaway from the IndyCar opener is that you know, there's a lot of talk about you know, who's got the dominant aero kit, Honda or Chevy. And I really don't think the performance gap is between Honda and Chevy. I think the performance gap is between Penske and everybody else in the world. You know, that being said, Graham Rahal really surprised me. You know, I tend to write this guy off every year because he just disappoints so often. And really, he looked good. You know, were it not for him having a hot head and running over poor old Charlie Kimball, I think he was headed for a podium. You know, I don't know what y'all think about that, but he looked pretty darn good. Yeah.
He was fastest in the race warm-up, but he used red tires to get that fastest lap, which to me makes no sense at all, unless he was just throwing away a set of qualifying tires that had already been used up.
You know, the interesting thing is that Montoya said his car was better on the blacks, and that's what won him the race, so... you know, the whole tire thing. It's I think you know, the setup of the car plays into the tire thing, and some, you know, sometimes you're better on red, sometimes you're better on black. You know, conventional wisdom tells you should be faster on the reds, but you know, Montoya's car was much more balanced on the blacks, and that's what got him up in contention to win the race.
Yeah, I think that's actually something
they may be more prone on the aero kits. When you look at, it seemed like Honda's managed reds better as far as how long tire life could stand than the Chevys, and it looked like Chevys were just a lot faster on blacks than Hondas.
You know, I read an interesting thing just earlier today, and it was it had to do with testing at Sebring, and it was both Ryan Hunter-Reay and somebody else whose name escapes me. I can't remember who it was, but they both tested at Sebring and thought their cars were pretty damn fast. And when they got to St. Pete, everything they learned at Sebring didn't help them.
Wow.
I thought that was kind of interesting, and I wonder if we will see tracks in the future, you know, on the schedule that will favor the Honda way over the Chevy. You know, it's just an interesting tidbit to think about.
I think it's going to be the case because Derek Walker mentioned in a conversation that he and I had that they're going to have guys that are going to be competing really hard and trying to tweak different things about the aero kits to see which cars are going to be better. Some tracks may favor the Honda, some may favor the Chevrolet. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how they change later on this year. Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's too early to tell. I'm not really sure. You know, like going back up on what Frank said, is it Honda versus Chevy or is it Penske versus everyone else? I mean, I think, you know, honestly, the top Honda team this weekend was Jack Hawksworth in the 41. He got to the front on strategy, but he was looking for a top five finish until he had the pit, and he ended up, you know, I mean, he wasn't the highest finishing Honda, but he was, you know, he was inside the top 10 for much of the day, and you know, that lifted AJ Foyt's spirits. Well, no doubt, at least AJ, we're thinking about you. So, and I mean, I think another thing, Penske has the advantage of. You know, obviously they've got four top flight drivers. You know, they've got Power, Pagano, Castroneves, and Montoya. But Penske also had kind of an unfair advantage of I think they were the exclusive Chevy test team for the aero kits. I mean, that was one of the lingering issues last year is that only the top teams could test the aero kits in their prototype phases. I mean at Fontana a few team owners were a little pissy about that. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's still too early to tell. Testing is testing, and we won't know until we get to the race weekends. But I think the ovals, it's going to be a whole nother ball game. We're not even going to have an oval test until shortly before the month of May. So, Adam?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, Ryan Hunter-Reay was quoted as saying right before the season opener, saying he thinks there's just so much data for the teams to get from their own kits that he expects everybody to kind of focus on themselves for the time being. But they have the development boxes that they can choose which parts to develop when. And I think after a couple races, you will see teams start to apply to make those changes. And even with the Honda kit, I think someone from HPD said there's literally thousands of combinations you can run looking at all the winglets and flaps and everything. That's not that surprising. So I think it'll be really interesting to watch that develop. And I do think the oval kits will be completely different. The public and the media hasn't really gotten a good glimpse at the oval kit yet. But if you look at when Honda debuted their road course street circuit short oval kit, they released a video clip. And if you pause it in several spots, you can see their oval kit, their super speedway kit, under development. Very interesting take on the rear wing. Looks a lot like something off of a GT or Le Mans prototype, if you feel free to go check that out. But I'll echo Frank. I don't think it's so much that Chevy is ahead of Honda. There's still a long way to go. I think it's that Penske is ahead of everybody else. I think the captain has really pulled one over on everybody. And he's got, I don't know if they're for sure the four best drivers in IndyCar, but easily four of the best. I would say Will Power is probably the best driver in IndyCar still. I would say pound for pound, as Joey likes to mention, the Juan Pablo Montoya might be the most talented driver on the planet, period. So it's looks like a rough road.
I didn't say the planet. You're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say the planet.
Pound for pound. I said pound for pound, like you like to say.
Well, pound for pound is what I say, but I don't put him down there as best on the planet. Pound for pound, best in IndyCar, sure.
Yeah.
Well, you just completed a whole sentence and threw my name in there. Now I just feel like, throw me under the bus here.
I feel a little used there.
A little bit.
On a side note, Montoya's got more pounds than a lot of those guys, so.
Good save there.
For the
wins
and lose the weight.
I wanted to throw this out because somebody had mentioned that Chevy was the or Penske was the Chevy factory team. On the Honda side, Andretti is the factory team, and from what I saw on the track, it was the AJ Foyt team and the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan team that did more with the Honda kit, even though Andretti supposedly is the Honda factory team. I mean, yes, Ryan Hunter Ray finished highest finishing Honda, but for most of the race, the Andretti cars were not in contention. Sato made the fast six in qualifying. Hawksworth actually led a few laps, and Ray Hall looked pretty dominant out there. So I don't necessarily know that factory team status has as much to do with the fact that the captain is just so well prepared.
Yeah, and we also had a few notable names make their return to IndyCar. Simona De Silvestro actually came out and she qualified decent in 11. And then in final practice she got run over by Newgarden. And actually another story of the weekend that kind of relates to that is Honda's going through a bit of a parts shortage. That actually walked up and down the pack and a few of the Honda teams, not all of them. I mean James Dick's team being one of them. And I think Dale Coyne's team being another, and probably were a few others, but as far as spare parts go, they have some spare DW12 wing and end plates in their pits, which I think part of the parts shortage goes to, before I get off too much on a rant, that the parts shortage goes to that Honda and Chevy only had a month to have everything homologated and then everything be mass produced. So that inevitably is going to cause a part shortage and, kind of questioning a little bit of IndyCar logic anywhere. But anyways, back on Simona, she had a rather disappointing day, I would say. I wouldn't say lackluster. I would just say disappointing. That, first she got hit by Carlos Munoz, which damaged the inner part of her suspension. And, I talked to her after the race, and she pretty much said, I don't really know what he was thinking there, and that was kind of the downward spiral of our day. And then later, James Jakes had a problem and slowed down going into 13, and Simona had nowhere to go and clobbered into him, and she was assessed a drive-through penalty for avoidable contact. So she ended up finishing 17th, and then Sage Karam made his debut on his debut on a road course in an Indy car and had the race lead for about 100 yards until Will Power came through. But Karam largely, I talked to him after the race too. He largely struggled with fuel conservation. I'm sure it's probably different in Indy car than what he's used to in a sports car. I mean, then again, he's only run a handful of Tudor Championship rounds. But, I think Karam can get there. There's very few Juan Pablo Montoya's and Nigel Mansell's that can go out right in their first few races in an Indy car and go out and win right away. I think Karam can get there. I mean, his charge from 31st to 9th at the Indy 500 shows that, and you need to look at his ladder stats. I think Karam can get there.
So, did you hear anything on further rides for Karam? Yeah, I know we'll probably see him at Indy. Have you heard anything on
you know, NOLA or Long Beach?
No. About NOLA.
Not. Go ahead.
I'm saying he is positive. He is positive on NOLA. He's, you know, things are looking good. People are positive, but that's really it. We haven't heard anything like definite yet.
No.
It would just be. It would just be sad
really
for the.
Go ahead, Frank.
I'd just be sad for the series to have 24 cars in the opener, and then drop to like 22 or 20 for the second race of the season. And, you know, I'm just hoping that some of these cats, you know, like Simona and Sage, get a full time ride in the series. Just keep the car count up.
Yeah, well,
agreed.
Actually, on that note, you kind of brought us into our next topic of, you know, Justin Wilson was announced as the fourth driver for Andretti at the Indy 500. They're still looking for a sponsor. And actually yesterday, Simona was confirmed as the fifth driver for Andretti Autosport at Indy, and she's backed by TE Connectivity. So, good for those guys. I mean, I think Wilson stepping back to get a part-time ride with Andretti is much better than a full-time ride with Dale Coyne. And same thing with Simona. I mean, if Indy goes well for them, they could turn to a full-time ride. You know, maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I'm thinking if Justin Wilson was to pull off a 2011-esque win where Dan Holden won for Brian Herta Autosport, if Wilson would do that, I think, you know, in IndyCar would just erupt if that was the case. I mean, Wilson's always been a badass behind the wheel, and, you know, and we've always, and, you know, he was able to get a Dale Coyne car in the top five in IndyCar points and a few years back. So, you know, I guess the month of May is go time for Justin and Simona.
Definitely.
So another thing we saw this weekend, I do want to bring this up before we move on to another segment. In Indy Lights, we saw the Carlin team completely dominate the front row in qualifying for the Indy Lights race. They started on pole in the second, won both races with Ed Jones. I tell you what, they have really raised the level of competition in the Indy Lights Championship, where a lot of teams are going to have to catch up to them, and they very well could become the Team Penske of the Indy Lights Championship. I mean, Schmidt-Peterson, they had a car that finished in second place in both races with Jack Harvey. And, of course, we all know how much he needs second places to win championships. But I tell you what, if they go into IndyCar racing with the amount of preparation they have in Indy Lights, they could potentially give the top-level teams a run for their money if they pursue IndyCar the same way they do Indy Lights.
I hope they do. IndyCar could always use more top teams.
And bring more teams from Europe over. That'd be fantastic too. Raise the level of competition even more so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ferrari, McLaren. Let's dream a little bit here.
That never hurts to dream. I mean, McLaren has done IndyCar before. Ferrari sent people over. Ferrari almost jumped to IndyCar at the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, and didn't. So there's historical precedence for it. I think it's a long shot, but, you know, we can always dream. And speaking of dreaming, I kind of want to shift over to F1 a little bit. Who here would have dreamt that Sebastian Vettel would have won the second race of the season for Ferrari? What a great result that was. What do you think about it, guys?
I was asleep at the time, so I didn't see the race. But after, you know, doing a little bit of reading about it, it's about time that we finally got Ferrari a win in Formula 1. This is Ferrari's first win in 2 years. I think the same thing for Vettel, because he did, you know, nothing last year. He needed this really, really badly. I'm glad that we finally got another winner in Formula 1. Of course, the race is at 4 o'clock in the morning our time in St. Petersburg when we were over there, so we didn't get a chance to see the race. But I mean, it's also the other big takeaway for that weekend is Manor actually got on the grid, and their one car that did finish was, you know, 3 laps down, but still, he was at least, you know,
and he
racing,
finished.
Which I like that. Yeah, he did finish too, which is really nice.
was a great finish. Joey, I know you have a lot of opinions on this F1 race. What do you think?
I mean, you're talking about something that, you know, we could have dreamed of. I mean, I think people were dreaming of it. We were just waiting on reality to hit. And, you know, I look at this, and it's about time that we saw the culmination. The sport needed Ferrari to come to the forefront. When Ferrari is at the forefront, Formula One is great. And that's just the truth. I mean, Michael Schumacher dominated the sport. You didn't really hear much of a lull in viewership. You didn't hear much of a lull in a lot of different areas. Don't get me wrong, a lot of teams were pissed off because Ferrari just had it. They had the driver, they had the team. You know, everybody was right there rooting for him. It was nice to see a culmination of Vettel, who didn't win last year, Ferrari that didn't win last year, both struggling in their respective circles, essentially dumped the trash. Vettel for Red Bull, Ferrari just did a complete makeover from top to bottom, with the exception of replacing Kimi Raikkonen and Jamie Allison, who did wonders with this new car, and it's 100% his fingerprints on this car, unlike last year. I think that a lot of those come into play. I question Sergio Marchionne just because, frankly, you know, I love Luca. I look at this, and I love the team principle that's in place right now with Arrivabene. I didn't think I would, but when I look at how everything's transpired and I look at what happened, really, the old Ferrari team was seasoned for Alonso. And, you know, you're trying to build an infrastructure around one guy and you're still not getting it done. It's time to dump the trash. And that's essentially what they did, and it's nice. I think ultimately, if Felipe Nasr can learn how to drive, then maybe Kimi Raikkonen would have been sitting on the podium right there with Vettel. But for the second week in a row, second race in a row, it's Nasr who ends up ruining his day and gets into him, and it's, you know, battling back from there. But really impressed by Verstappen. And as far as what to expect in China, Nico Rosberg is traditionally strong there. Lewis Hamilton is pulling a ridiculous bitch fest over, oh my gosh, I have competition now. And he's sitting here bitching over the radio like a little kid. It's Formula One. It's the top level of motorsport in the world. You're going to have competition. If you don't like competition, get the hell out and go race something else. I mean, you want to be a sissy because you dominated last year and suddenly now your rival growing up is your rival again. Congratulations. It happens. It's F1. Development, technology, it's all going to bring everything to the forefront. And, you know, much like we see in IndyCar with Penske really holding the keys, it's the same story in open wheel across the board, whatever form of motorsport it is. If you find the development early, you're going to be at the forefront. That's just how it is. And we're seeing that finally start to shift a little bit in F1, and it's really nice. Hopefully we see Williams pick up their program, so really it's a three-horse race. Ultimately, I think this is going to be a two-horse race until mid-season when we've got the developments coming into play for teams like Force India. Maybe even Toro Rosso continues to put the hammer down and outrun the I don't know what else to call it because they're the sister to everything right now, but, you know, the senior team, the Red Bull senior team. So I fully expect Ferrari to be in control maybe of 6 to 9 wins this year and rival Mercedes.
I mean, absolutely. You know, I think that Ferrari taking the win is just it's a boom for Formula One. After the opening weekend where we had so many problems, we had a depleted grid where we start 15 cars, and there were so many problems and so many, and just Formula One got crucified in the press after that, you know, bit of a debacle in the first race. And, you know, I was on, you know, my own radio show with the Draft and the Circus Cats saying this, like, okay, so Formula One, you don't have to guess. It's going to be Mercedes every week. And then, you know, Vettel comes out and wins the race. It really reminds me of, you know, 95, 96 when Ferrari decided to retool and put Schumacher in there, and they're doing the same thing now. They've retooled. They've made a lot of management changes. They've got some of the old blood out, some new blood in, and just to grab a win so early in the season that, you know, maybe this is going to be a very exciting Formula One season.
and not a route from the Mercedes guys. So, after Australia, I was pretty sure Formula One was going to suck all year long. After Malaysia, my mind has changed. I'm really looking forward to the season.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
They didn't make I know that there was a lot of teams that were complaining about maybe dropping the BHP on the Mercedes. That didn't actually happen yet. That was still something that F1 senior officials were debating, but they never came to that conclusion for Malaysia, right?
No. As far as I know, they did not, yeah. I mean, I was just thinking in my own head that Mercedes is going to dominate the season. But no, that's that was speculation and not anything official.
Yeah, no, there's not going to be any balance of performance, I think. And I want to really echo, Frank, you hit the nail on the head. It is like when Ferrari retooled and Schumacher came on. When Schumacher joined Ferrari, he was already a two-time world champ. His first win for Ferrari was in an unusual weather condition, terrible rains in Spain. If you catch that reference, points to you.
Mainly on the plane.
And exactly. And Schumacher, destroyed everyone. He won the race by over a minute, which in modern F1 is incredible. And he was so emotional and so happy to be turning Ferrari around and to be winning again. And that is exactly what we saw with Vettel. This is a guy who won his 40th Grand Prix. He's one behind Senna in the all-time list. He's a four-time champion. And yet he was crying like an excited little boy winning his first important race of his life. That emotion, that passion, and I think it's been rejuvenated with Vettel there. It's being led at the front by Arrivabene, who is doing an amazing, amazing job. And Sergio Marchionne, he said that a Ferrari that's not winning is not Ferrari. Well, it's Ferrari again, and as Nico Rosberg cheekily and humbly and rather embarrassedly said on the podium, game on. It is game on. I am super excited for the rest of this Formula One season.
Well, what's so great about this is a couple years ago when we were heading into this V6 era, Kimi Raikkonen was a free agent and he was exploring his options. And there for a while, it looked like he might team with Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull. Him and Vettel are very, very, very close friends. And it looked like that might be the case. Fast forward to a year later, we're witnessing best friends, and it's what you dream of growing up. You grow up with your buddies and whatnot, and you always dream of leading the charge together, and they get a chance to do that. And it's so crazy to me because when I look at Ferrari now, back then I looked at them and they were the white-collar team. They're very prim, very proper. I look at this team as a very blue-collar bunch. When I look at Mercedes and their Nico Rosberg is saying game on and I'm hearing Lewis Hamilton bitch like a sissy, I'm sitting here and I see Ferrari and it's like they're the ones that are about to take the entire world to the tool shed and they know it. And it's wonderful. They're the ones that are actually getting gritty and going after it. And that's a side of Ferrari that I haven't seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, but it's a side of Ferrari we've seen again and again and again. I mean, they, as an organization, know how to do that. You're talking, 75 when they added Lauda to the team and brought the team. In the later 70s, they had Villeneuve and Schechter and brought new life to the team. And then they had a couple of lean years and added Schumacher. So now this is their latest rebirth. And it's fantastic how this old team just keeps coming to the forefront and keeping the magnificence of Formula One in the hearts and minds of all the fans.
Oh, well said, Frank. Well, if everybody's finished talking about Formula One, got a lot of interesting things going on in the world of NASCAR. I know Joey was a little sad because Kevin Harvick was going after the Kings record of 12 1-2 finishes in a row. It fell short. 11, my bad. 12 to set a new record. Why don't you give us a rundown on all the latest in NASCAR, Joey?
Well, first off, am I a little sad? Yes, because in the record books, it's still going to say Richard Petty. But to be completely honest, the talent level that's out there today, hitting eight straight is absolutely ridiculous. And, to echo what Matt Weaver, a popular speed, said last week on the show, this is arguably the greatest record currently being sought after in NASCAR, or was sought after at this point. But, you know, this isn't a cupcake. This isn't the 70s where you had less worry on inspection and you had less of everything. Honestly, less of a microscope put on you. I mean, there's reports of teams drilling holes in tires to keep air pressure afloat and do everything they can to stay at the forefront in gray areas. And you got six-time champions in the field mixed with Jeff Gordon, who's a legend, and a four-time champ, Jeff Gordon, or Tony Stewart. You know, there's just a combination of just unbelievable talent from top to bottom. And when you look at the fact that this team that Harvick's a part of runs Hendrick equipment for Stewart Haas Racing, and those engines supply just an absolute crap ton of other teams up and down the grid, but most notably Hendrick Motorsports, Dale Jr., Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, Casey Kane, and then Stewart Haas, between Tony Stewart, Kurt Busch, Kevin Harvick, and Danica Patrick. He's sitting here putting eight straight finishes together in front of every single one of those drivers, and it's just, you know, even though the streak ended, I think that it's something that they still took everything one race at a time. I think it's still something that everybody in the NASCAR world should definitely appreciate, because that's going to be something that doesn't get touched for a long time again. You know, but looking at Martinsville as a whole, I was very impressed with Denny Hamlin coming out the way he did. It was the first non-restricted plate win for Toyota in over a year. Year and a week, to be exact. And, you know, Keselowski, I know Frank's going to love this. I mean, Keselowski is showing the same muscle he did last year at the start of the season. He was really strong. He's coming this year. He's, you know, he's right there with it. It's, you know, I'm wondering, Penske's got something very unique. And, you know, you and I were at the TMS Media Day on Tuesday. You know, something that I didn't get a chance to mention, and it's something that Eddie Gossage had said, is that he really feels like with Joey Logano that this is a passing of the torch. When you look at Jeff Gordon and then you look at Joey Logano, Jeff Gordon on his way out, Joey Logano really starting to reign into superstar status and really starting to be the man to beat each and every week when you show up at a racetrack. Roger Penske has that it factor when he can look at a driver. He doesn't – and you know, when you look at him, how often does he pick a driver and the driver isn't there for an incredibly long amount of time? I mean, it's very rare occasions. You look at how long Elio's been with him. You look at how long Hildefarin was with him. You're looking at power now. You know, you look at Brad. You look at Rusty Wallace. There's an it factor that he can find and harness and build up, and he gives that driver exactly what they need on that team, from crew chief or engineer straight through to tire changers and jackman. And I'm very impressed with what they've been able to do on the IndyCar side and NASCAR side. And I look at this season, and do you got to go through Team Penske or NASCAR? Absolutely. Toyota's power plant, Toyota teams right now are not on the same page. And, you know, Chevy, they focus all their stuff on Hendrick. So, obviously, with Hendrick sending out everything, that's a no-brainer. Ford is going to struggle because Roush is just absolutely god-awful. you know, and I look at Toyota and Michael Waltrip Racing and Joe Gibbs. Back in a couple of years ago, they were the team to beat. I mean, Matt Kenseth came in, clicked off seven wins. Martin Truex Jr. almost made the chase, if not for his team deciding to have itchy arms at Richmond. And ever since then, they've fallen backwards. And I look at this, and I look at what's going on at Penske with those Fords, and it's just absolutely unbelievable. So ultimately, I think this is Penske versus Hendrick, and Hendrick power. I think ultimately you're going to be looking at Logano versus Harvick in the finale, and potentially, hopefully, for Frank, Keselowski's right there with them fighting. If it's much like last year, I think they'll find the extra oomph to get over the hump. And I know as a fan favorite, everybody's wanting Jeff Gordon to at least go out swinging for his finale.
Well, absolutely. But I think when you look at the Penske organization as a whole, you talk about the captive and him giving drivers what they need. There's another guy in the Penske organization who has really turned this team into a top-flight contender in both series, and that's Tim Cindric. Mm-hmm. the first person I ever interviewed when I took up journalism was Tim Cedric, and this was in 1999. And I just found him to be an absolutely brilliant man, a forward thinker, and what he's done with his organization over the last 15-16 years is incredible. He's taken this the Penske team, which was already a top team in IndyCar, to a top team in NASCAR, and now to they're just taking on the world there, man. Cindric, this guy is absolutely brilliant. Every time I see him at the track there, I shake his hand, smile at him. But I've got to give him as much credit as we give the captain for this, for the absolute dominance they're having across the board in different racing series. So,
that's a good point, Frank. And Tim Cindric, just popping into my head, do you think he would ever go out and have his own organization, have his own team? Because he has been Penske's right-hand guy, and so often we see that right-hand guy eventually split away. Do you think he's someone that would do that, or do you think he is, loyal to Roger to the end?
It's the old Ray Evraham thing. Ray Evraham tried to start his own team in NASCAR, and, the results were mixed there. I just wonder if he just stays right there with the captain. The captain's not getting any younger. Maybe one day Tim will get the keys to the kingdom and take over Penske entirely. If I was him, I'd stay put. That's me. But then again, I do not know what ambition Tim has on his own. I gather from all my conversations, he's very happy where he's at. I know he's well compensated. I know he does his job to the highest level, but there may be one day when, the captain decides to step back and retire, sit on the beach in the Bahamas and let Tim take the keys to the castle. So we'll see. But if it was me, I'd stay put.
Yeah, I think I'd do the same. And then it inspires another question I have for you. You've been watching IndyCar, watching NASCAR a lot longer than the rest of us have. Everybody always calls Roger Penske the captain. We all do. Everyone you talk to does. Do you know where he got that from? I have not heard the definitive story on a captain nickname.
Top of my head, no, I don't. I could probably look it up, but no, off the top of my head, I think it's just the presence that he has when he comes in a room. He just, if you've ever been in a room where Roger Penske's at the microphone talking, he just has this commanding presence where everybody stops and listens, I've got to say it probably comes from that, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I almost literally ran into him, bumped into him on pit row at TMS last June, and I kind of just stopped in my tracks and let the captain pass. So even just bumping into him without even speaking to the man, he has that kind of power just walking through a crowd. So I guess you may be right there.
Frank, what do you make of, I told you, I was telling everybody just a little bit ago about some of the words that Texas Motor Speedway President Eddie Gossage said on Joey Logano. What do you take on that whenever he's saying that this could be potentially a passing of the torch from Jeff Gordon to him? Do you really – I mean, he's been in the sport for 7 years at the Sprint Cup level, but make no mistake, it's 24 years old, and he's going to be there a while to contend against newcomers like Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney.
There's a reason they call Joey Logano sliced bread, I love this young kid. He's humble. He's talented. He comes into the shop, does his job, does his testing. I think he's right there. He's right in the right place to be the next big star of the series. The Daytona 500 win didn't fall into his lap. He earned that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So I'm all on board with Logano. Yeah, so. Passing of the torch, they always say Jeff Gordon's first race was Richard Petty's last race. Passing of the torch right there. So perhaps. I don't know. So, I think Logano has what it takes to be the next big star of the series. He's got some stiff competition. You know, Harvick is not going anywhere. Matt Kansas is still very strong. So, but Joe Logano, yeah.
I'm all in.
That
Team Penske organization is really building up a nice NASCAR lineup to be equivalent to rival that of a Hendrick, and honestly rival how talented its IndyCar team is. When you look at how they've got Keselowski there, they've got Logano, and then, you know, I know a lot of the casual fans aren't going to know who Ryan Blaney is whenever he steps in, and he stepped in at Daytona, but I tell you what, I mean, that's as talented as a kid coming up as there is, and honestly, if you didn't have a guy like Chase Elliott going and winning the Nationwide Championship, the world would definitely know more about Ryan Blaney. And, I mean, look at the resources that he's going to have at his fingertips, with not only having Keselowski and Logano there as teammates, but just Team Penske, who honestly has been head and shoulders above anybody when it comes to being the front runner of Ford. I mean, Roush has fallen to just barely keeping ahead of Front Row Motorsports. And, you know, you've got future talent like Chris Buescher and Darrell Wallace Jr. that are looking to break into the sport. And, I mean, it's not going to be long when guys like Jeff Gordon, obviously, at the end of this year, but, I mean, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Greg Biffle, there's a lot of drivers here in the next 5 years that are going to be on their way out, most likely. And there's going to be a very high turnover of youth in at the top series.
Yeah, and you'll see the same thing in IndyCar. I mean, if you look at the top guys in IndyCar, they're all pushing 40. So, you know, we got most of our major series, you know, other than Formula One, where they're all young guys to begin with, you're going to see a new generation of drivers coming on. And NASCAR has done a better job of getting those guys in the car than IndyCar has. So.
You know, along those lines, to jump back to IndyCar a little bit, one of our friends of the show, Matthew Brabham, drove an Andretti Autosport car today. It was his first time the wheel behind a real, genuine IndyCar. It was just for filming purposes, but he said he enjoyed it, so I want to congrats to him on the air.
He didn't do too bad at St. Petersburg in the Indy Lights races. I think he finished, maybe sixth or seventh in the second race. I know he was trying to give Scott Hargrove a real hard time in the second race there, but he could never quite get around him. Two guys driving one-offs for their respective teams. Really doing really well. Josh?
I don't have anything on Brabham here, but just another IndyCar news nugget. The Panther versus Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan lawsuit was actually thrown out today, and the judge pretty much told that John Barnes' case was pretty baseless. Which, given, you know, I know kind of a little bit about that guy's dirty laundry. He supposedly screwed over Vitor Mira. Yeah, I know he kind of screwed over Dan Weldon. So you know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't want to say he got what's coming to him, but you know, I mean, there's a reason why he's not on the grid now.
Hey, Josh, don't want to cut you off there, but we have a caller on hold here. Actually, got to put them on now. Hello, caller, you are in the gravel trap.
Big fan, please respond.
Finally.
How are you guys doing?
Good. Good. How you doing?
You know, it's the off weekend, but there's no such thing as a true off weekend for those of us in motorsports.
Yeah, you're at the K&M Pro Series?
I am. I'm heading towards Greenville Pickens Speedway.
Awesome. Oh, lovely, lovely country down there.
That's what they say. I've yet to go to Greenville, so this is a new bucket list experience for me.
Matt, this is new racetrack, what, two for you? I was actually, this is kind of a record for Matt and myself, because he and I were actually on the air with Matt Nix down there at the the NBC Sports Florida Talk radio show that they do, Racing Nation. And I think this was, I think when he went to wherever he was last week, I think that was new racetrack number 81 that he's been to, and his goal for the end of the year was 100. Am I right?
Yeah,
there,
the goal is 100. I did the list during the off season. I forget exactly where I ended up. It was somewhere in the 80s. But certainly, I've knocked off two in a row here now, two weekends in a row. In between visits to Martinsville last week, we knocked off Southern National for the Cars Tour, and this weekend, the off weekend for all the national touring divisions, knocking another one off here in Greenville.
And then next weekend will be 83 when you head over to Nova Motorsports Park with us over at the IndyCar race.
That's the goal. It's not finalized yet. I got one step closer to today, and certainly, you know, I'm kind of like a driver working his way towards the grid. If I can put some situations together, put some funds together, I'll be on the grid. But fingers crossed, it looks like it. Really looking forward to watching this new IndyCar aero kit. I was listening to the show for the past couple of minutes and hearing you guys talk about not only Formula One but IndyCar as well. And there's a lot of mystique and intrigue surrounding everything that's going on right now in IndyCar. And certainly there's a lot of momentum coming out of St. Petersburg.
It was definitely good seeing all the people there as well. Saw some other good faces down there too, like David Letterman. He was there, said hello to him. First time I'd seen him in person, actually. It was fantastic. I think that was the first race I've ever seen him outside of Indianapolis in a long, long time. What did you think about the race, Matt?
Well, to be honest, I haven't seen it yet. I hope to be able to watch it on Saturday night on my way back from Greenville. Fingers crossed. I have it loaded up on the old tablet. Just haven't had time to pull it up yet. And truthfully, it just depends on whether or not I do decide to go to NOLA or if I can go to NOLA. If everything falls into place for me to go to NOLA, I'll sit down and watch St. Petersburg to try to put the pieces together and try to get some coverage plans started, because on the IndyCar front, not a lot of things have gone as anticipated during the off season, but hopefully I'll see you guys at a bunch of races this year.
Well, you have a bed here if you want to come stay.
I appreciate it.
Hey, you know, guys, I wanted to actually touch on something. Frank, you wrote, you know, a badass article that came out today. I had a chance to read on it a little bit, and it more or less kind of embodied what IndyCar has had to go through from, you know, the USAC days all the way to now. And just kind of get your take, touch on it a little bit, give the fans maybe a little bit of a teaser here, and get us all kind of like chomping at the bit on it.
Oh, well, yeah, my article was called, you know, Aero Kits, a Hit and Miss, or Something New to Bitch About. But, you know, as long as I've been watching IndyCar, us IndyCar fans, we just like to bitch about stuff. You know, that's long and short.
True.
Whether it's good, whether it's bad, we like to bitch. But I think that IndyCar has given us that platform where they gave us the split, the USAC kart split in the 70s. And the IRL kart split in the 90s, and it has put such a great divide between the IndyCar fans that it still exists to this day. I mean, I tend to read social media comments. Why, I don't know. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment to read that some of the nonsense that I read. You know, I think half these guys putting this stuff up here are turds. And the rest of them are actually pretty informed and intelligent, and I watched the battles going on there. But I just, as IndyCar fans, we like to bitch. We like to bitch. You know, our schedule sucks. Yeah, we like to bitch. Why is your schedule on the Labor Day? Yeah, let's bitch about that, you know. So we don't have enough ovals. Let's bitch about that. So, well, that's the crux of my article. Again, you know, I'm one of these optimistic saps that wants the series to thrive. I want the series to thrive. I love the series. I love the cars. I love the drivers. I hate the schedule. You know, I hate some of the ridiculous things that demand the size to do. I don't mind the aero kits. You know, jury's still out on the aero kits. You know, so
I hate the fact that a spectator was injured big time, but you know, take a minute, read my article. It's just a little rant on my part, you know. For the most part, I don't rant, you know. I'm not a ranter. I'm more of a supporter of the series, but yeah, every now and again, yeah. Let me just rant, and that's what that article is about. I hope you enjoy reading it.
If I can interject here a second, I was a huge fan of that column. I read it about an hour ago or so, and you know, I thought it was very well said. And this is kind of my rebuttal to it. IndyCar fans are certainly a fussy lot. I mean, you pretty much recap the detail in all the ways that IndyCar fans can kind of drone on and on about their lot in life and all the things that are wrong with the series. But I think a lot of that traditionally has stemmed not because the fans are unhappy with the decision-making, but that the decision-making felt like it had no rhyme or reason. It was all reactionary. There was no larger plan. And I think for better or worse, you're going to see some of the needless sniping back and forth from the various factions of the fan base kind of diminish a little bit, because whether you like the current direction, whether you like the current plan, if there's one thing you can say about Martin Miles, there is a vision. There is a long-term vision, whether it's the brief schedule and trying to end before the NFL season. For better or worse, that is a long-term plan that he has in place. Starting the season sooner, he's thinking big picture. This aero kit, he wants to transform IndyCar into something that's new, cool, something completely different than anything else out there in racing, completely different from NASCAR, vastly different than Formula One. His marketing strategy is very unique in that he's taken a lot of the same approaches that he had with the ATP, and he's trying to apply them to IndyCar. Some of that's going to hit, some of that's going to miss. But I think traditionally, the IndyCar fan base has been so volatile and so vitriolic just because there hasn't been a big picture plan, and a lot of it was reactionary instead of proactive. And I think that this year, early on, you're seeing the foundations being laid for that big picture. And I think, again, full circle, we're going to see the sniping kind of drop back a little bit.
And, Matt, I agree with you 100%. And I just hope to God that IndyCar keeps Mark Miles in charge for a while. Because, I mean, how many times have we seen somebody come in with a vision and be quickly ousted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Randy Bernard had a pretty good vision, and he was quickly ousted. You know, before him, Chris Pook ran IndyCar for a while. He was ousted. Before him, Bobby Rahal ran a kart for a while, and he went back to went to Europe to run the Jaguar Formula One team. So, if they can keep one guy in place for a while and let the long term vision play out, I'm all in, big time. You know, I support the series. I have since I was a little kid, and I will support it forever. But I want them to allow the long-term plan to play out. So, you know, Matt, I agree with everything you're saying, and I just keep my fingers crossed they don't decide to kick this guy out and bring, you know, Tony George back or something.
Yeah, I would brace for impact if that day came. But yeah, I mean, well, Frank, I haven't read your article yet. I apologize, but I'll get on as soon as the show's over. But yeah, I mean, IndyCar fans have nowadays become conditioned to be negative. I mean, you know, I mean, I know you guys said some positives about Miles, and I see your point, but, you know, I mean, ending the season by you know, I mean, you're starting to, as AR1's Brian Carocchio said, is that, you know, you're starting to piss off the people that you are loyal to you, and, you know, and that's not a good thing. And, you know, I mean, ending season by Labor Day when we were here, other than the aero kits, I mean, what's it going to be next year? I mean, supposedly a newer international swing, and it looks like, and that looks like it's going to have some sturdy foundation. Just stay tuned for that. But, you know, and then bringing in Brian Barnhart, you know, I mean, that, you know, I mean, people in the media have
some people to me have said a lot of things, but you know, I'm sure not that many people are happy about that. I mean, you know, but it's just overall. I mean, the history of IndyCar racing has always been a power struggle. You know, I mean that in American sports car racing has been just as unstable. But I will say this, and I said it before, that you know the only time we've ever had a legitimately run IndyCar series was the championship auto racing teams from 1979 through 2003. You know, they actually got IndyCar racing to a huge level, and they were able to survive for a few years after the split and before it eventually collapsed into itself. But, you know, it's just, you know, unfortunately, we have this fallacy of hope that we hope things can get better, but we just have to see some results now, and I'm willing to sit back and see how the season unfolds before I make a further judgment. Adam?
We were always talking about Mark Miles' vision to make IndyCar different than everything else, and to me, that is saving grace. That is the best thing about IndyCar. It is different than everybody else. It does ovals, like NASCAR does ovals, like lots of stock car series do ovals, but it does ovals faster than anyone in the world. It does road courses. F1 does road courses. Sports cars do road courses, but Indy does them faster than anybody but Formula One. Same for street circuits. So Indy is this uniquely created series. It's uniquely American series. I hope Miles can stick around and that vision can continue and it can grow. I think they're on the upward trajectory, but I have kind of a philosophical question and I want to get everybody's kind of input on it. Even if the issues that we as media and lots of fans have with IndyCar, even if those could all magically slowly be fixed, I think everyone is so conditioned to bitching, as Frank was saying, that people will still bitch. There is such that loop, that cycle of negativity. And even if the racing was perfect, and even if it was everyone's ideal version of what IndyCar could be, which is the series with perhaps the most potential in the world, and so little of it sometimes gets fulfilled, I think people would still bitch. What do y'all think?
I'm going to say this one point before I leave. I got to jump off the line here, but I do want to respond to your question. Look at NASCAR. I mean, I think NASCAR is the most stable series on this side of the pond, and yet still a very large portion of the fan base that gets off on just being negative and fussing, whether it's debris cautions, whether it's commercials, whether it's the lack of short tracks, guilty. There's always something to fuss about. And I think sometimes because there's so much of it in IndyCar that those fans and those media members think that it's somehow more prevalent there. That's just social media. That's just this bubble we're all living in. And because IndyCar is so much more of a niche audience than NASCAR, the entire fan base right now is that internet bubble, that social media bubble. And if the sport gets to where we believe it can and believe it will once this big picture, this big vision is implemented, you're going to start bringing in more of the casual fans, and we're going to get outside of this bubble. And two other notes, you guys were talking about Tim Cindric earlier. He is the future of Team Penske, and certainly that's what his thinking there is. And Vettel, you guys were talking about Vettel earlier as well. Vettel's victory has brought me back to F1, not because I'm a fan of Vettel, it's just because it's so much more interesting now that those Mercedes finally have a rival. Guys, thanks for having me on. You guys have a good show.
Thank you. Have a good night, Matt.
Well, I guess I'll try to follow up Matt's thing. You know, typically I'm the ranter of this bunch. I'm a little loose with the tongue. I always find something to bitch and moan about, and you know, maybe Matt's talking about me when he's talking about fans like that, but I look at that. If IndyCar fixed everything, you know, it's like answering questions. You're only going to come up with more questions to ask once certain answers are fulfilled. You know, the racing is good, the product's good, and we've got Chevy and Honda. Awesome. Why the hell don't we have a third manufacturer in the series? I mean, there's always going to be something that I'm going to teeter in. Well, we've got all these great drivers. James Jakes and Francisco, whatever his name is, Dracon is in the series. Why isn't Matt Brabham or Spencer Pigot or, you know, why isn't somebody else? Why isn't Justin Wilson in the seat that weekend? We got to watch your back markers. You know, there's always going to be something there for me to bitch about. For me personally, and I know that, gosh, if I'm bitching, I'm sure that there's a whole lot of fans behind me, you know, enjoying the banter and saying the same thing. So, you know, the bitching will never stop. And we've used a whole lot more adjectives on this show than we've used on several others. Luckily, they've been a little bit cleaner than some of the other ones used. But, yeah, ultimately, that's my spin on it, is there's always going to be something because you can't fix everything. You can only make a product and fine-tune it to the best of your abilities. But, I mean, ultimately, there's always more questions. And then, you know, Mark Miles, great guy. Glad he's in there. I'm over here questioning things like, you know, how did the drivers feel about Barnhart being back in control of certain things? You know, why did they fall back on Barnhart? There was a lot of people. I would love to have seen a fresh face like a Paul Stacey or a Wally Dallenbeck Jr. in there, or, you know, something of that nature. Somebody that was a driver, that's been a part of it, knows what it's like to be in that seat. I'd love to see a former driver really take a role like that over. Nothing against Barnhart per se, but he had his time, and I think that by bringing him back, you pose more questions than you do answers, and, you know, obviously you might be pissing off your series champion given the tirade from a few years back at Loudon. And so, you know, things like that kind of run into my mind when I see stuff like that, and when I see the series trying to grow, I really wonder what Mark Miles' vision really is when I see guys like that put into power, and I wonder if maybe that was just a stopgap because they don't have anybody else. You know, that's little things like that are going to be the things that I bitch about. Manufacturers, competition guys, you know, other drivers that should be on the field that aren't. It's like F1. We shouldn't be watching Marcus Ericsson in a Sauber. You know, we should be watching David Valsecchi, a GP2 champion, in that ride. I mean, just stuff that makes sense.
To me, anyway. But anyway, you know, the Barnhart thing is kind of funny because actually most of the drivers are actually pretty cool with Barnhart coming back. He actually knows the job well. Took a lot of heat, but whoever has that job is going to take a lot of heat. John Vikas was there for a bit, and suddenly he's not. You know, they were going to have a three-member triumvirate take over the officiating. And Jan Vikas, who was been in IndyCar, has been broadcast forever, was going to be there on the thing, and he did it for 1 week and gave it away. Said, nope, not going to do it. So, it's a thankless job. You know, no matter what call you make, someone's going to be happy, someone's going to be mad. So, Barnhart, he's actually got the credentials to do the job. So, while most of the fans are pretty pissed, most of the drivers are actually pretty cool with Barnhart. So,
well, looks like someone's having some fun in the background there. So, you mentioned Barnhart has a thankless job. They actually talked about that in the post-race press conference at St. Petersburg. And Power actually was kind of tongue-in-cheek saying, you know, I like, you know, I'm somewhat of a fan of what he's doing. And then Tony Khan kind of gave him a hard time saying, didn't you flip him off once? And everybody in the theater just kind of gave a chuckle. But I will say this.
Yeah.
For all the as you termed it, all the bitching that IndyCar fans like to do, there really wasn't too much controversy you could say about race control except them leaving that one caution for a little bit later on, number one. And number two, some people saying, you know, if Ray Hall and Kimball had that penalty, they should have given one to Pagano for hitting Kimball as well. That's really it. I can't really say that it was too big of an issue having Barnhart up there in race control, honestly. I don't know about you guys, but that's just my opinion.
Well, it was only
the man knows how to do his job. He does. Long and short, so. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, it's
kind of hard to tell after just one race. I mean, we'll see how it plans out, but I mean, it's not so much, you know, the media that or you know, it might be the media that you know, the second Barnhart makes a bad call, you know the fans on Twitter are going to be all over it, and you know, and it's kind of the issue with Barnhart too, is that nobody, is that his at the end of his tenure the last time, after Las Vegas in 2011, everyone's trust in Barnhart had reached such a low ebb, that nobody ever trusted the guy to actually ever be right. So I mean, but you know, we'll see how the season pans out. I mean, I think three steward system and more cameras and what have you will be better. But you know, we'll see what happens. I'll hold my breath.
Don't hold it for too long. I'll echo that. I think we'll see what happens. I think IndyCar is on the right track. I think it's been on the right track for a while, since they introduced the DW12, since they had an American champ and Ryan Hunter Ray, since Verizon came on board, since Will Power finally won a championship, since Montoya's come back, since the Aero Kids have brought back all this interest. Next, they'll go to an international race that hopefully will take and not falter like Brazil did. I think the plans are in place. There's going to be some stability now, minus the Aero Kids evolving, which would be a nice plot line to follow. So I think it's very much on the up and up and will give us a lot to write about, a lot to talk about here on the air, and hopefully a lot for the fans to enjoy.
Speaking of being on the right track, sorry, Adam, if I may, you mentioned being on the right track. Just to dovetail on what you're saying, they're actually going to be heading, well, as we all know, to Nola Motorsports Park here in 9 days, coming up on Sunday, April 12th. And I tell you what, I am looking forward to this race a lot. In fact, Ted Lewis, the sports coordinator for the Advocate, asked me, this must be like Christmas for you, huh? I said, no, this is more like my birthday. Christmas is in May for me. He just got a good chuckle out of that. And it's kind of true because my birthday is 1 month before Christmas, so naturally it would also fit here as well. But it's looking fantastic. I haven't been on the track yet. In fact, I actually don't have a single day off at my other job between now and the day of the race, except for Easter Sunday. And, well, of course, race weekend, of course, being Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm looking forward to seeing how this all turns out. It's going to be a fantastic event. It's the first outdoor professional four-wheel motorsports event being held in the Greater New Orleans area since 1995. It's got a lot of good things going for it. It's going to be basically a big car festival is how I think they're going to term it. And it has a lot going for it. I'm looking forward to it a lot. Joey?
I guess I should feel special because my birthday is actually around Memorial Day weekend or on it, depending on the year. So, I mean, you know, I feel special, I guess, in that regard, or I should. You know, Easter weekend is always kind of tricky just because there's no racing. Honestly, for me, it's the most boring weekend of the year because, like, literally, there was no qualifying or anything on today, so I'm mowing the yard and waxing my car and doing anything I can to fill time. But I'm looking forward to what's potentially the most intense weekend for me to really kick off my year, potentially going down to Nola and seeing you and bringing Weaver with me if possible, and or him bringing me if possible, I should say, and being around the Sprint Cup Series again, getting a chance to go back up to TMS, maybe watching another Gordon versus Kozlowski fight and being in the middle of it, that would be a lot of fun. So, you know, as it relates to anything like that, those are the things I'm looking forward to. I'm just ready for Easter to kind of be over with and really eager to see, obviously, like all the direction of IndyCar and hopefully they finally fulfill that potential that all of us see and all of us, I mean, we all love the series. We're a little hard on it, maybe more than the common fan in many ways, but we know what they could be and we know what we want them to be. And ultimately, at the end of the day, all of us see that potential. Everybody sees it. It's just a matter of finding how to tap into it. And I think they're finally starting to figure that out with these Arrow kits. And at least they're building towards something, and they're not staying stagnant like the Indy Lights car was for millions of years until this year. So they're doing a lot of things. They're pushing in that direction. And I think it's only a matter of time.
Well, I think that sums up IndyCar pretty nicely. Mm-hmm. We've got precisely 15 minutes left on the show tonight. And the other big news in the racing world this weekend, along with Vettel winning and Montoya winning, this win made me quite pleased. Valentino Rossi won the season-opening MotoGP race. What did you think of that one, Joey?
I loved it. I loved it because I can't stand Mark Marquez. That's probably, you know, that's the fan of me coming out. The thing
that's okay.
That,
I felt the same way.
Well, the thing is, Marquez grew up in a generation where traction control was put on these bikes and you could have a little bit more lean. So you get real comfortable with more lean. So you're biting more of the side of the tire. And by doing that, you can push through the corners better. And ultimately, I mean, yeah, he kicked everybody else that's, you know, part of that generation that he races in. He kicked their ass in Moto 2 and Moto 3, and that's great. He stepped up to the big boys and automatically was fast because he's with Honda Repsol, the top team in the series. You know, you got Valentino Rossi and Jorge Lorenzo and, you know, his teammate Danny Pedrosa, which is no pushover. I mean, that guy's a three-time runner-up of the series. So it's to me, it's no surprise that he came in and was fast right away and scored wins. The domination he had last year, it's not the fact that he won that was surprising. It's the manner in which he did it and how often. Look, he ended up finishing fifth. He made a mistake in the race. He finished fifth. Rossi at one point was 10th, ends up winning the race. Ducati's on the podium, both Ducati's, Dovizioso and Iannone. And, I mean, Lorenzo, I believe, was taken up in fourth, if I remember correctly. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this season has the ability to finally maybe humble Marquez, and maybe some of these drivers have learned during the offseason that extra lean and building up on that traction control and learning how to really get more bite out of the side of the tire, because a lot of things that Yamaha struggled with, the team that Lorenzo and Rossi are a part of, were grip. You know, the grip would go away late in the stages of the race. Marquez had more grip than Pedrosa a lot of the time because he was leaning more. And so you built more grip into the middle of that tire. You could go the entire length of the race and not have as many issues. So hopefully they've got that configured. The unfortunate news out of everything is they're getting ready to race the Circuit of the Americas. And Danny Pedrosa actually just got done having surgery on his arm to solve an arm pump issue. And the name leaves me, I believe he's a Japanese rider that's going to be replacing him at COTA and the race after. But, you know, obviously thoughts with Pedrosa. Hopefully he comes back strong, comes back healthy, and comes back and is already challenging for top fives. You know, I'm really interested to see, you know, the WSBK riders, the World Superbike riders that came in. Laverty ended up leading that group of Loris Baz and, goodness gracious, I'm really bad with names tonight. But there's two other riders
right.
That were
well, like every
a
night.
Part of that. There were two other riders that were a part of that. Marshall Melandri, the rival of Laverty and WSBK. They ended up actually finishing below him, but, you know, ultimately the Aspar Honda team with Nicky Hayden and Eugene Laverty were still finishing 16th and 17th. On the grid. Nothing to write home about, but it is a brand new team with brand new drivers learning a new bike configuration. I'm hoping as an American that team can step up because we want to see Americans do well. But maybe by the end of the year they're challenging for top tens. But ultimately this was going to be maybe a three-horse race. I think finally we have Ducati has finally got it. We saw Dovizioso grow the last couple of years, especially last year. Where he consistently was on the podium and challenged for podiums. Maybe this is the year that Dovizioso, Marquez, and Rossi can be a three-horse race for the title. And Lorenzo should be in the mix, and I think it speaks volumes to Rossi for his age and for the stuff that he had gone through, and ultimately for a couple of years, taking the number two seat behind Rossi or Lorenzo while Lorenzo was winning those championships, to come back and come back as strong as he has. I think this has potential to be a very special season in MotoGP, and it couldn't be at a better time that you see the heights of F1 and MotoGP start to turn from the domination that was last year and the tide begin to roll into what is going to be hopefully an exciting 2015.
I could not agree more. I think it's, you know, it could be a golden age of motorsport looking back, particularly for MotoGP and for Formula One. The sheer talent level at the top of each is really disgusting. And you could even throw IndyCar and NASCAR into the mix there. We are in an age, regardless of who's winning races or who's winning the championships, of absolute immense talent in all of the major series we cover. Guys that have won, you know, multiple races and multiple championships. Guys that are writing record books, and if not writing record books, getting really, really close. I think Lorenzo and Rossi are going to be able to challenge Marquez for the full season, which is good because that got old really, really quickly. I think WSBK is getting back more into the spotlight. And as thrilled as I was for Rossi to win, as thrilled as I was for Montoya to win, nothing from this past weekend made me happier than seeing Vettel crying on that podium, jumping up in the air with his fist. You know, the return of the finger, the return of Ferrari, that's one of the best things that could happen to racing, hands down. And it finally happened. We've got 9 minutes to go here, so I kind of want to get everyone's final thoughts. That was really my final thoughts summed up very succinctly. But what is everyone's final thoughts for this past weekend, and what are you looking ahead to for next weekend? I'll start with Frank.
Well, we got NASCAR's at Texas. Always a great track. Eddie Gossage always puts on a great show there. Again, I would expect to be the Penske cars to be strong there. IndyCar at NOLA. You know, jury's out there. You know, we just don't know. Something tells me the Honda cars are going to be better than the Chevys at NOLA. And I'm probably absolutely wrong, and probably Will Power is going to win a race. Formula One's in China. But, you know, Formula One's up in the air, man. You know, I thought earlier in the year that it'd be Mercedes week after week after week, but hell, man, Ferrari. So let's give that one to Vettel. So that's my final thought. Happy Easter, everybody. Enjoy your off weekend from racing. Week from Sunday, everybody's racing.
Adam?
Josh, how about you?
Mm-hmm.
I had a relatively good weekend at St. Petersburg with Christopher DeHarty, and, you know, might be at the NASCAR race at TMS next weekend. Still got some other things I got to make sure I can cover on my end. But then after that, you know, I'll be heading to the best race on the schedule, outside the Indy 500, the Long Beach Grand Prix. So looking forward to that, and you know, looking forward to see how the first race in New Orleans shakes out.
Well, Josh, I'll tell you what, I was really happy with the weekend that we had at St. Petersburg. I can't recall any major hiccups that we had, except for forgetting our jackets in the car on Friday. It was. It was just a really good weekend. Of course, we still have a lot of the season across the entire calendar left to go, and it's going to be really nice seeing how everything takes place in New Orleans. Now, of course, we cannot forget that we do have the rest of the Mazur to Indy coming up, with Long Beach seeing the next race for Indy Lights. USF 2000 and Pro Mazur are going to be at NOLA Motorsports Park. And then, of course, all three of the series are going to reconvene at Barber in a few weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing how those championships all turn out. Of course, my championship prediction for Pro Mazda, Weiron Tan, did not have a good weekend at all over in St. Petersburg. He had accidents in both races. So it's going to be great to see how he can fight back I'm looking forward to seeing how USF 2000 shakes up because the Cape Motorsports guys are right on the heels of Jake Edson, considering that he only signed with Pabst Racing for the season, I think a week or two before St. Petersburg took place. There's a lot of different variables that are kind of coming into play here, and I can't wait to see how this all shakes out. Of course, with Simone and Justin Wilson being in Andretti, it's going to be great for them. I hope Andretti does really well at the 500, but then again, we'll see what takes place. You never know what can happen. Joey, what are your final thoughts, bro?
Well, everybody knows I'm a Kevin Harvick fan by now. I can't keep that a secret, so I'm looking forward to heading to TMS because I've only been able to cover two NASCAR races. This is going to be my third Sprint Cup race. And in that time span, he's got a second, a first, a championship. And so, yeah, I can't really complain at his record when I'm at the track. It's always fun to watch, and he's a goof in the media center. But, you know, looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing maybe the Hondas doing something at NOLA, as Frank touched on. And if they do, hoping that, you know, the Andretti bunch can finally put their supremacy stamp back on Honda. I look for a lot out of Jack Hawksworth, though. I really loved the run he had at St. Pete. And to me, that may have been the run of the entire race. I know that he was off pitch strategy and off sequence from all the other guys, but for a guy like that to step into that seat, lead a few laps, ultimately be in the top three for a decent portion of the race, I think that builds to his confidence. He is... Yeah, I know y'all think highly of Justin Wilson, as do I. To me, Jack Hawksworth is probably the most talented guy not in a top-tier seat. So I'm really looking forward to that. As far as USF 2000 and anything like that, you know, junior levels, Pro Mazda, I'm looking for Victor Franzoni, the guy that I picked to win this title, to kind of get back into it. He had a rough weekend in St. Pete. To me, he's the most talented guy not in IndyCar right now, and that's including all junior series levels. I like Spencer Piggott a lot. I like Jack Harvey a lot. I think if you throw Franzoni, first off, he's got the name. That's like the coolest name ever. So, you know, you throw that in there, and he's Brazilian. I think that he's got a very, very good chance. You put him in the right seat to be a superstar in this sport, and I can see him being groomed as maybe the next Elio Castroneves. So, but looking forward to that. And also, I wanted to touch on this, is for all of our listeners out there, Frank Santoroski joined us on Drafting the Circuits. IndyCar Aero Kits, hit and miss, or just something new to bitch about, is his article. It's out, launched it today. It's a beautiful read. Give it a chance. Also, give him a follow at 7, is it S-E-V-E-N-G?
S-E-V-E-N-G, 1967 on Twitter, yeah.
There you go. So, wanted to give him that plug. It's always a pleasure to have him on. Love having you on, Frank. I love the raw opinion that you bring to the show. And
man. Yeah. I love talking with you guys, man. Really do.
And I enjoy it. And, of course, Joey, we had to think highly of Justin Wilson. He's 6'3". He's the tallest guy in IndyCar. We had to think highly of him, after all.
All y'all are short
six
people, though.
Four,
like,
actually.
He's not much taller than
four.
He'll be here all week, so try the veal.
Oh, Josh Farmer got a lot of my jokes over the weekend. I had him and Joshua Chin, who shared the hotel room with us. I had them both in stitches the entire time. It was great.
Oh God! And I thought Gilbert Gottfried told dirty jokes. And yes, ladies and gentlemen,
he needed to go to the Vatican
like
after
to
he heard mine. He had to go to the Vatican
after
he heard mine.
We'd like to
announce
the Christopher Hardy Comedy Hour.
One last thing on this final thought, because Frank noted Vettel for China. I know Rosberg's got a good history in China. If Felipe Nasr will stay away from my guy, Kimi Raikkonen will win China, period.
Ooh,
that is all.
Don't worry, people.
All right, it's good,
but,
bad,
I'll echo that. Kimi's due a good race, and I do think he'll have a great chance.
It's your turn for the final thought, Mr. Tate.
Yeah, we're down to 29 seconds, so my final thought is bring on China. Hopefully Mercedes will not come to dominate. Can't wait to see what happens in NOLA for IndyCar. Can't wait to see the continued evolving of that in NASCAR. And with 18 seconds left, I want to thank all the listeners for listening tonight. Adam Tate and Joey Barnes of Tribute Racing, Christopher Hardy of Motorsport.com, Josh Farmer of Motorsport Monday, and as always, Frank Santoroski of Drafting the Circuits. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.
Forza Jules.